Think on your feet for our Fast and Curious 5K, a one-of-a-kind race hosted by WBEZ and the Chicago Sun-Times on Saturday, July 27th at Humboldt Park. More info and early bird registration at WBEZ.org/events.
All right, you are listening to Nerdette Recaps Game of Thrones with Peter Sagal. I am Greta Johnson.
I'm Trisha Bobita, and we are joined by Peter Sagal.
I have missed you so. I truly have. It has been too long,
it's been a long delay.
It has been
June.
A very long delay.
I know. I so missed this experience that I tried to enlist my, and I hope you take this the right way, tried to enlist my dogs into recapping television episodes with me.
Uh-oh.
I had two dogs, and I said, okay, I said to one of the dogs, Dee Dee, I said, you have to know everything about this.
Oh, okay? So that's Trisha.
And then I turned to the other dog, whose name is Dutchie, and I said, you have to just hate it.
Good,
but it just, you know, they just sat there looking at me dumbly. It wasn't the same.
Well,
not
if you
enough
want,
pushback from
I'll
the
turn
pets.
My head inquisitively occasionally when you talk.
That's
that
usually
help?
Greta's job. What you talking about?
Okay, so today we are talking about where we left off in season 6 in anticipation of the upcoming season 7, and we'll talk a little bit about predictions as well. It's also worth noting right off the bat that we're going to use a new hashtag this year.
It's so exciting.
It is very exciting. GOT Nerd Caps. So if you want to carry on the conversation on the Twitters with us or Instagram or whatever, use GOT Nerd Caps.
Let's get it trending, kids. Is that what you're supposed to say at moments like that?
Yeah, I think you got it, Peter.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm trying to speak like the youths.
You did in our finale from last season because you explained to Greta what shipping was.
Oh, yeah. I
remember that. Yes, that was exciting.
Nor does she have teenage daughters.
Are you guys going to tell me or just make
fun of
me? To
ship is to speculate, postulate romantic relationships between fictional characters.
Has that enhanced your life in any way in the subsequent year?
Of course it has, Peter. Absolutely.
Have you taken up shipping yourself?
Ooh, no.
Well, I know that you reread Harry Potter.
I am rereading Harry Potter. I'm almost done with book 6.
Yes. And that, as you know, shipping, I think that is like the ground zero for shipping.
It's true. Harry and Ginny are finally together. It's very exciting.
You saw that coming, didn't you?
Is
it not true
did.
That Ginny says at one point early on in her first introduction when she sees Harry, in the movies anyway, I'm going to marry him.
Oh, I don't think that's in the books, but it's obvious that she likes him from the beginning.
Okay. Anyway, I'm going to mention Harry Potter a little later.
Good. Okay. Well, wrong series for the moment. Back to Westeros.
Yes.
Should we just start? Should I run through these?
So what are we going to do first?
Well, I figured we could start with Daenerys and just kind of go from there.
So we are going to establish where everybody was when last we checked.
Where we left off. Yeah.
Which was a long time ago.
It was a long time
More
ago.
More than a year was the finale of season 6.
A different world,
I know.
I would say.
Gas was so much more expensive.
I know. That's pretty much the only thing that's changed.
Uh-huh.
If you think about like where we were early summer of 2016 and now, pretty much gas prices have gone down.
Same
Otherwise,
deal.
Everything.
Yeah, maybe Brexit or whatever, but beyond that.
Something like that.
You know.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, no other news.
I think there's a new flavor of Oreos.
Okay. Well, with that out of the way, Daenerys is on her way to Westeros. She's got the dragons. Tyrion is in her hand. She also has some Unsullied and Dothraki.
Yes.
And
she's got everybody.
The Martells and the Tyrells and some Greyjoys.
Yeah, well, what's interesting is I rewatched the last two episodes of last season, which was interesting.
I'm glad someone did.
Someone has to, like, keep up the standards right here. And what was interesting was the final shot of the last episode, where basically you pan across her sailing army, and it's almost like just going down her inventory. And so here are the Dothraki and their horses in the holds. Here are the Unsullied all standing there. And I wonder, because everybody in this entire sequence of shots is standing on their ship facing directly forward, like they're just watching.
They're just standing there.
They're just standing there looking where they're going. And you wonder, are they going to do that the whole voyage? Because it's like 3 weeks. Are they just going to stand there and stare forward? So the Dothraki, the Unsullied, then you have you cut to, as you say, the command ship where there's Daenerys next to Tyrion, next to Varys, or Varys is right behind
them.
Which is weird because the last time we saw Varys is he was in
back.
Dorne.
Yeah.
Or as we might call it, the dry Iron Islands.
Yes, as opposed to wet Dorne.
Exactly. And I don't know how he got there, but it clearly, like, yes, he's part of, like, the inventory, so he's got to be there. And then, of course,
finally... We of the internet have decided how Varys got there.
Oh, how did Varys
get
there?
Maybe they can apparate.
Varys is a merman.
Oh, right.
No.
This is a well-beloved internet theory.
It's a very good meme.
Much has been photoshopped.
Is that why he wears, like, the long flowing robes?
Yes. Have you ever seen his feet?
He picks them up, and there's, like, little flippers.
He's a merman.
That is hilarious. I hadn't heard heard that one. So anyway, that's where he is. So then you, of course, then you have the dragons. And the dragons are flying about. And the last shot, of course, is the dragons swooping up beyond the virtual camera because it's all CGI. And I'm also wondering, do the dragons fly the whole way? Do they ever get to land? Where do they land? On what ship gets the dragon?
Ooh. Goes, poosh. They're now the size of 747s.
Exactly.
I don't think they need to land.
Really?
I mean, eventually, I'm sure, but they'll be fine for the voyage.
They get tired, though.
No, man.
No? Just no? They don't? No?
No.
No,
they're dragons.
Do you know that all flying creatures, including birds, given the chance, evolve away from flight because flight is so energy expensive?
Oh,
interesting. So that's why you have ostriches. It was like as soon as any you isolate any bird from a predator, and it will just evolve away from flight because flight is a very energy-expensive evolutionary tactic. So the dragons have got to land and rest, is what I'm saying.
Wait, ostriches are better birds?
Yeah, that's fascinating.
Ostriches are better birds.
They seem like worse birds.
Why don't they have arms?
Well, that depends on your standard of bird, right?
Okay.
I mean, if your standard of bird is a sort of size
standard
and badasseriness,
bird.
Ostriches are great. If your standard of bird is flitting about, yeah, they suck. It's all arbitrary.
You know, I recently heard a very interesting story on All Things Considered about how egg shape is determined by flight ability.
Really?
Yeah, it's fascinating.
I'll send you a link.
That'd be great.
We've gone so far off the rails so far.
I know.
Get ready, everyone.
I can't even see the rails. I don't remember what rails are. So that's the end of the last season, and that's where everybody is, and they are heading toward Westeros.
It's very exciting.
Finally.
It's about time.
It certainly is.
Okay, so Cersei has the crown.
Yes.
But she's not in good shape.
Well, define good again. Once again, we have to talk about your standards.
Her kids are dead.
That's true.
And
Moment of silence for the worst king, King Tommen.
Yes. You know what's funny? I remember a lot of times during last season I used to make fun of Tommen by going, "Hello, I'm King Tommen.
Oh, yeah.
You are my wife. And there was a moment, he doesn't speak a lot in the last two episodes, but one of the things he says is he makes his little speech and he says, "We've decided there shall be no trial by combat." And literally this is what he sounds like. "We've decided there shall be no trial by combat." So I was actually entirely accurate in my mockery of him.
Yep. Did that make you feel bad?
It did a little bit.
Yeah.
But it was also rather sad to see him again leap from the parapet, which was sad. So,
it's not good.
So yes, all her three kids are dead. Somebody pointed out in one of these astoundingly obsessive recap videos, which make us look like amateurs, that you may remember in the opening sequence of the final episode, The Winds of Winter, there's a long, long sequence of all the players in King's Landing getting dressed and becoming appointed with their, you know, there's a shot of Jonathan Pryce as the High Sparrow putting on his what would you call that, his shift?
Yeah,
his robe.
I think shift is appropriate. Yeah.
And then,
his
of course,
tea towel.
There's people being dressed, including Cersei. And somebody, again, the obsessive video recapper, pointed out that her style of dress is very reminiscent of none other than Tywin Lannister, with a very high collar and the sort of almost like martial shoulder pads. So, yeah, so clearly that was a signal. And by the time in the last shot of the episode, she's dressed that way.
Yeah.
With her kind of weird, again, military looking
armor-esque gown.
Exactly. Yeah. Sitting on the throne.
Armor-esque
gown. So clearly that transformation of her was indicated visually.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we head north.
Yes.
We have Zombie John.
Zombie John.
Who's just in charge now and it seems resigned to being in charge because after winning the battle and
he's running the show.
He does seem ambivalent about it.
Yeah.
Again, having just watched the episode again last night, he seems like, I don't know about this. Remember, there's that argument with Sansa about who should get the Lord's Chamber, and he's not sure. And even the scene where he is declared the King of the North, he is not all that into it. It is clear. He is ambivalent about it.
Well, and it seems Sansa is ambivalent about it too, wouldn't you say?
Yeah. Sansa is ambivalent about a lot of things, which is strange considering her newly found force of action, but she doesn't seem clear. I mean, there's no shot, for example, of either of them joining the cheers as the men and lords around them. Oh, I should just say men, and of course the great Lady Mormont, who has the best speech. I had forgotten about that.
Our favorite.
She is so awesome. I had remembered that she. I remember, of course, her first appearance when they're trying to gather the army, and I remember when, you know, she appears at the parley before the Battle of the Bastards. But I did not remember that great speech she has where she stands up and shames the other lords. You know, you didn't show up for the battle. You didn't show up for the battle. But the House of Mormont stayed true, says the 9-year-old girl. And
she is
so great.
So good. If she gets the Iron Throne, I'm cool with that.
That would totally be fine.
So John is king of the North, but it's worth noting he only got it because of help from Knights of the Vale, right?
Yes.
Via Littlefinger,
yes.
Which is potentially problematic looking
yes,
forward.
Yes, it is, because he's sitting there, and we also, of course, had that big moment where I think we talked about it in the last recap of the last episode, where finally Baelish says what he wants.
Mm-hmm.
And watching that scene again, it's so clear that the writer is like, yes, this is a huge reveal, because it's the speech is, I have always, every decision I have made, I'm going to try to do Baelish voice. Every decision I have made, it has been
you can't blink,
with one vision in mind. I'm not blinking. My eyes are pinned open like Malcolm McDowell in Clockwork Orange.
Good.
I have had one vision in mind, and that vision, any decision I've made, would it make that vision more likely or less? And like, what's the vision? What's the vision? Come on, tell me. And finally he says, it is me on the Iron Throne next to you. And then he goes in for the creepiest, most unwelcome kiss I have ever seen.
Yeah.
And even her reaction is kind of ambiguous.
And this is in the land of where they're...
I believe it's set in the Godswood at Winterfell.
Oh, okay. It's in the Godswood.
Yes.
For some reason, I was placing it in where they keep all the bodies. What is that called? Why can't I want to say
the crypt.
Sept? The crypt, yes.
The crypt, not the sept, but the
yeah,
crypt.
Yeah, the crypt. Okay, but it wasn't in the crypt. It was in the
crypt.
It was
in the Godswood. I believe.
Okay.
So now we know Peter Baelish has like laid his cards on the table, which
yeah.
he's never done before. And somebody, I was reading the New York Times sort of bring us up to date. And they
because the paper of record has much to say about Game
yeah,
of Thrones.
Yeah, it's very interesting
it
how
I'm
much they
kidding.
Have to say about
they
Game
really,
of Thrones.
Really,
basically, the New York Times is like one-third Game of Thrones, one-third Hamilton, and one-third the destruction of the Republic. That's
uh-huh.
basically
yeah.
all we got.
Sounds about right.
I know. But it pointed out something that I had forgotten. There's been so much that's happening that Peter Baelish was, in fact, the one responsible for not only killing off King Joffrey, but also killing off Jon Arryn. Which was the inciting event of the entire thing.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's why King Robert came north to ask poor old dumb Ned Stark to be his hand, because Jon Arryn suddenly died, and Peter Baelish did that. We forget that sometimes.
Man, how bummed would you be if Peter Baelish ended up on the Iron Throne?
It would not be that satisfying.
I think he's going to get to sit in it once, and the dragon's just going to burn into a crisp. In like a second.
Like just for a moment he'll
yeah.
sit there?
Yeah. yeah. Literally a second before he dies.
Oh, I would watch that. I would happily watch that.
The Stark siblings are reconverging,
mm-hmm. yes.
it seems, because we have Arya back on the mainland.
Yes. And the last we see of her, of course, is she executes...
Walder Frey.
Walder Frey. The last thing I want you to see is a smark styling at you. A Stark smiling at you. And that's what she does. I wonder, not for the first time, what all of this training and badassery is going to do to Arya's mind. You know what I thought about? I know this is a grim thing, but I thought about like the child soldiers of Africa, like what being trained to kill does to their minds. Because that's... Yeah, Arya, yeah. That,
yeah.
oh boy. Yeah, she's pretty vicious right
she's
now.
She's been through a lot.
You know, she slashes his throat without even a grimace. It's like, ugh.
Yeah, she's a little bit Dexter Morgan-y, I think, this season. It's just the kill list and a lot of, you know, quiet murder.
Be careful when she starts making breakfast.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, we can put a little Dexter theme in there.
Yeah, please.
Bran is still north of the wall.
Yes.
And we think he's probably going to try to go south of the wall, but...
Well, what's interesting, again, I hadn't remembered this. You may remember that they were rescued after their horrific escape from
by
Benjen Stark,
yeah.
now a kind of undead but still good character.
Mostly dead, slightly alive.
Exactly.
Friendly Uncle Stark.
What was the phrase from Princess Bride? He's only partly dead? Mostly dead, slightly alive, yes. Thank you. Why did I ever
Yeah, man.
You?
Why did you question
know.
Her? She had it.
And what happens is he brings them south after rescuing them with his flaming, whatever it is, mace. We had an argument about this
oh,
with listeners.
Oh, yeah.
Not a
it
morning
wasn't
star.
Flail.
Flail. Thank you.
I got so much flack for you getting that wrong.
Flail
my nerd
flack.
Friends.
Stand down,
tell
internet.
Peter. You need to tell Peter that's not a mace. It's a
flail.
Exactly.
Sorry,
now we know.
Who I'm doing an impression of.
That's pretty accurate. And he leaves them. He sort of takes a Bran, who, remember, can't walk off his horse, and he puts him down next to a tree. And he says, well, good luck. He says, I can't get over the wall with you because the
oh,
wall
right.
has many spells, including the preventing the dead from crossing it. And I'm dead, so I'm leaving. And he leaves, leaving Bran, who is now a full-grown man. He's like over 6 feet, it seems, that actor, with a young woman. And nothing.
No horse.
And they have a 700-foot ice wall to get over. And then the last thing that we see Bran do is, of course, he reaches up and touches the weirwood, which is, of course, his access to psychic past. Mm-hmm. And we finally go back and find out who Jon Snow is.
Yes.
We learn, I didn't realize that we learned that at the very last moments of the very last episode.
Of course, they held it until the last possible moment that they could.
So only he knows that.
Only he knows that, yeah.
Yeah, Jon doesn't know that. Daenerys doesn't know that. Nobody knows that. Ned knows that. Ned's dead.
Doesn't Littlefinger think he knows that?
There was that hint.
That happened in the crypt.
Yep. Yes, that happened many episodes ago.
He does side-eye about Lyanna Stark.
Yes.
Going like, she was captured.
Uh-huh. Yes, exactly.
And let's not forget my favorite character.
Mm-hmm.
Sam has made it to the Citadel.
He has.
He's in the library.
He is. Last
Sam Gamgee?
Sam Gamgee. Might as well be. There is a definite, yeah. So that's where he is. And who else is there left?
I think we just need a moment of silence for Hodor. Actually.
Well, even though Hodor, of course, disappeared three episodes.
In terms of people who died in season six, like, he's definitely who I'm the most upset about.
I know. It was very sad to see him go.
Yeah.
Especially now that, you know who else is sad about it?
Mira.
Yeah, because she's got to carry Jon herself with no horse and nothing. How'd she get him over the wall?
They'll figure it out. I'm not worried about
them. She's going to, pull him over his shoulder and start climbing? Jeez.
There are ways through the base of the wall.
Yeah, they'll get through.
They're
not going to climb it.
Yeah.
Okay, in a minute, we will give you some of our predictions of what's to come in season 7.
He's dead. He can't talk.
Look who knows so much, huh? Well, it just so happens that your friend here is only mostly dead. There's a big difference between mostly dead and all dead. Please open his mouth.
Okay, so I actually did this thing where I pulled some clips from each of us from our last episode that we did.
Yeah.
I would say this is just like my arbitrary selection of what I found to be the most fun things that each of us said in the last episode. So with that in mind, here you go.
I think the ending, by the way, is going to be just like the ending of the Phantom Tollbooth, where all the forces of knowledge gather together to fight the demons. It'll be very sweet.
That is sweet.
It is.
I just thought we should reflect on that for a moment.
I know.
It's also a moment of Greta being nice to Peter, which feels like an
weird
outlier.
If it hadn't been captured on tape, no one would believe it. As sentimental as that sounded, it's still probably likely, in the sense that because it's so obvious that there's this evil force approaching from the north, the demons, and in order to defeat them, all of the characters we've been watching are either going to have to line up or get out of the way. So it's not, if we end up with a huge battle scene.
Which we will.
Well, we are eventually, although maybe this, I think there are battles to come before then. A huge battle scene of all the characters we've been seeing, Dothraki, armies of Westeros, the Knights of the Vale, the forces of Dorne, everybody lining up against Night King and his army of the undead. That would not be an unlikely outcome.
But,
although probably Milo and Tok, the dog who ticks, will not be involved.
Who knows?
You never know. They could pop up.
It could happen.
I know.
So speaking of the forces of knowledge, I think that's a good cue for mine, which is this. I would like to put money down that Sam will save the day one way or another. He's going to find something in that library that's going to change the game.
Right.
You agreed with me.
I did.
Weird, right?
I completely blocked out any memory of any comedy or kindness between us. This is possible? No, only because Sam has clearly become such a beloved and favorite character, although we know that doesn't mean anything in this show. It seems so strange that they would take all that time to send him to the library just to put him off the game board.
Yeah, I love the idea that he'll discover something over there.
Some weakness of the undead, perhaps, or of the others. No, not they call them the White Walkers. I've been reading the book again, too. So
also, let's not forget who makes these books and makes this show. Nerdy boys.
And
so who's actually probably going to save the day?
The nerdiest boy of them all.
Neville Longbottom.
Exactly. I never thought about that, or maybe I had thought about it, but you're absolutely right that if you wanted to pick one character out of this whole thing who is most like its author, it is Sam. If you've ever seen or heard George R. R. Martin speak, he is Samwell Tarly. He He is a big guy who spent a lot of time doing books and never been very good at anything physical. The only thing that George R. R. Martin does not have in common with Samuel Tarly is George R. R. Martin is a big football fan.
Oh, interesting.
So if Samuel Tarly expressed, do they have any sports in Westeros?
I think they just have toiling.
Toiling. They have toiling, battle, and feasting.
Well, yeah, they've got a...
Reaving.
They've got jousting.
Yeah, jousting, I would say, is sporting.
Yeah. There's no, like, equivalent of, like... I mean, like, for example...
Quidditch?
No, nothing like Quidditch.
Maybe they do things with heads and sticks. I wouldn't be surprised.
You're thinking, like, that game, like, in the movie, The Man Who Would Be King, where they play soccer.
Yeah.
Polo, with, but it's a head in a bag.
Yeah, that seems like something
I could
that would
see
happen.
That. That, the Dothraki
like
would do that.
Game.
It's good to put it in the bag, though. I feel like that's important.
Yeah. Otherwise, yeah.
Well, that's fun. So, Tricia, should we listen to your clip?
Yeah, because mine is in direct conflict with Peter's.
Is it?
Mm-hmm. I mean, the one other area that we could go into, and the books I don't think have yet, Peter, correct me if I'm wrong, but that the show certainly could, is that we could learn much more about the White Walkers. They could be, for lack of a better term, humanized. They may have goals.
You mean like
goals.
the Night King and his,
right.
his lieutenants?
Right. So I just want to call a patriarchy jingle on myself for offering you the parenthetical that you may correct me
yes.
while saying something that I was pretty sure was right because I interneted it.
But stop it, Tricia.
I also think that it's going to be a long slog with not a lot of stakes if the White Walkers are just zombie demons. I think we need them to have agency. We need to understand them. There needs to be a political element to what they're doing. Otherwise, I'm going to be bored maybe.
Well, you're actually bringing up something that we talked about in another context. Sort of the flip side of it is the great thing about Game of Thrones, we talked about this endlessly, is that there's no, as George R. R. Martin himself has said, there's no simple good versus simple evil. They're all people who have good and evil wrapped up in them. People who do good things for evil reasons. People who do evil things for good reasons.
Except the White Walkers aren't people-y.
And yet, we talked about that even with all that wonderful human complexity, which makes everything so interesting, we are ultimately moving toward the same kind of battle that ended The Lord of the Rings, the forces of humanity, good life versus the forces of mindless destruction and death. So my take on that was, well, in the end, it's high fantasy and that's where you go and that's the ultimate stakes, life versus death. And your take as well, in order to prevent that kind of black and white, we're going to humanize the White Walkers. But it's hard to imagine a scene in which we somehow pan back. Maybe they take somebody prisoner and they take him back to their White Walker sort of palace and there's like a little White Walker mommy with a White Walker baby saying, we're just trying to make a life for our little horrible zombie demons.
I'm not saying they're more interesting than the human characters, but part of the point of the show to me is that, like you said, all the humans are very flawed.
Yes.
And wouldn't it be interesting to end up siding with or being conflicted about siding with the White Walkers, who maybe are saving some other greater good by convincing the humans that they have to prepare for winter, that they have to – it's all a climate change analogy, right?
Yeah.
The whole thing. But they don't kill and eat the babies. They turn them into White Walkers.
Right.
They were made from men by the children of the forest.
Yes.
So at their core, it seems like maybe they have a Jason and the Argonauts zombie army, but that the White Walkers themselves maybe are – fully formed beings who have maybe something interesting to say in this next however many episodes. I'm not saying I'm siding with the White Walkers yet, but I'm open to it.
I think the existence of Benjen in his current iteration indicates that that could be a possibility.
Yeah.
But I do find it hard to picture that we're going to
This is what puzzles me, is that so George R. R. Martin, as we have talked about, created this very complex world, this very complete world, this world in which was a reaction to Tolkien's black and white. Great. We all know that. The very first moment in both the TV show and the books was an encounter with a White Walker or an other, as they're called in the books. So clearly they were there from the beginning. He knew his whole plan, which seems to have been laid out really completely going back and watching some of the first episodes, which I did, included them. Like, he always knew that whatever else he was doing with the good and bad and the complex nature of human reality, those guys were waiting in the north. To what end? To bring it to a Tolkien-like conclusion or to do something like you said, to sort of completely subvert the whole notion of finding out, for example, to mix my fantasies, that the orcs are actually kind of decent types despite their large fangs.
So, Peter, you mentioned that you watched the last couple of episodes.
I did.
Also mentioned that you watched the first couple of episodes.
This is what I've been doing in preparation for this, is I watched the last two episodes of season six.
Mm-hmm.
I watched a couple more episodes from season one, and I also started reading the second book.
Great.
Because
great.
We remember I'm something of a fam.
Okay. Well, that's good to know.
And these are the things I picked up in no uncertain order. First of all, the Battle of the Bastards, the episode, the penultimate episode of last season, mm-hmm. remains one of the greatest episodes of television I have ever seen. And it got better watching it a second time. I cannot think of a battle scene in any genre that is better than the Battle of the Bastards.
Didn't you see it twice last year?
I did, but still, I watched it again and picked up more things. For example, you will never see a battle scene in which the physical development of what is going on is so clear.
Yeah.
Even when part of what they do, and there's this, I didn't remember this, there's an amazing, I would say, 90-second shot, continuous shot, must have been done with a lot of CGI, of John in the middle of the battle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it basically, it begins as you think he's about to face down the entire army by himself. His own army gallops by him and chaos begins. And it's just him in the middle of this maelstrom. And it is an incredible sequence of just chaos and blood. Stuff happens so insanely quickly, and yet it's all clear what's happening, that he's surrounded by death and destruction and metal flying everywhere. And then their predicament at the end as the Bolton shield wall starts.
Yeah.
And it's terrifying. It's just great. I also saw something that I had forgotten. We remember the scene in which Sansa – we talked about it – in which Sansa, prior to the battle, says to Jon, "You don't understand. You have to be so careful. You can't do what he wants."
Yeah. Don't do what Ramsay wants.
Right.
Play his games.
There are two things that I forgot about that scene, one at the beginning, one at the end. The thing at the beginning is she says to him, "Oh, all of you men decided to have your council of war and you didn't talk to me, the woman, who actually knows him." So
yep.
There's like an accusation of sexism and patriarchy. If she had had a patriarchy jingle, she could have played it.
Let's play one for Jon Snow.
Play one for Jon Snow.
The patriarchy speaking, so ladies be quiet. Peter Sagal is the worst.
And she's totally right. And then something I had totally forgotten. Not only does she predict what Ramsay is going to do, pointlessly because he doesn't listen to her, she also predicts that their younger brother is going to die. And I had forgotten that. And she's exactly right. She says, "No, he's going to die. He's the last true-born male heir to Winterfell. So, of course, he's going to go." I'm forgetting his name.
Rickon.
Rickon is going to die. Also, more praise, the sequence in which Rickon dies is done so incredibly well.
With the arrows.
Yes. If you have no life like me, go back and rewatch it.
Yeah.
Because the way they edit it is you think he's safe. There's, you know, you watch, he's running, you watch, I'm miming this as I do it, you watch Ramsay firing his arrows. Sometimes it doesn't even look where he's firing. And then there's...
I just really wish he had zigzagged.
Serpentine,
young man.
And then as the music builds, you see Rickon getting closer and closer to Jon, and you see all of a sudden Ramsay narrowing his eyes, aiming carefully, holding back the bowstring as he takes more aim, letting it fly, and like, "Oh, the arrow's going to get him. No, no, it landed next to him. He missed. Yay, he's going to make it." And then right before he runs into his arm, poof.
Yeah.
Ugh.
So good.
It's devastating. Yeah.
Such an amazing piece of filmmaking. Yay, guys. Two things I noticed, though, at the end.
Yes.
Which is that the battle ends with, they think, "Oh, we're in Winterfell. And we're safe," says Ramsay. "We have Winterfell." And then the giant knocks the door down and they run in.
Yeah,
the giant. And then there's a battle.
Oh, yeah, the giant.
I remember the giant.
And the giant dies.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there's a very touching moment as Jon is looking at the giant. And the giant looks at Jon and then the giant gets shot in the eye and dies. And it's really touching. The thing doesn't make any sense is it's like all of a sudden the giant bursts in the door. It's a castle. There are guards on the walls. They would have seen the giant coming.
True.
All right. Here's the last thing.
Maybe
I'm
he had
mention.
A really big invisibility cloak.
There you are. The last thing. You may remember that all last season I was like, why doesn't Sansa tell Jon about the Knights of the Vale? Why doesn't Sansa tell Jon about the Knights of the Vale? There's even the moment in the beginning of that episode where Sansa's arguing, don't go into battle. We need more men.
Yep.
And Jon's like, This is all the men we got. This is all we're ever going to get.
This is it.
And we got to do it. At which point, Sansa could say, actually, but doesn't. And as I said, the entire reason for that is so you could have the big surprise save. They're all about to be killed by the shield wall and the battle. It's going very, very, very badly. They're all being murdered.
And the cavalry comes in.
And you needed to preserve
the
surprise.
They roll in.
So how do we address that? Huge failure of actual characterization and motivation. Toward the end, in one of their last conversations, it might even be the same conversation where they talk about who gets the Lord's Chamber. Sansa says, hey, I'm really sorry I didn't tell you about Baelish and the Knights of the Vale. At which point John should say, why didn't you? But instead he says, you know, what's really important was that we all have to be in each other's side right now. We have and they embrace. And I'm like, come on.
They hug it out.
They hug it out. Jeez.
It's important for the Starks to stick together, though.
The last episode was also excellent in every regard. We've talked a little bit about it, about the dressing, about how everybody's organized. The sequence in which the episode begins before we get to what happens in King's Landing with sort of tying up where we had left off over in Meereen, which was the city was being attacked by
and
all
Dario's
the masters.
Just
oh, yeah,
on
the
his own now.
Well, that happens in this episode, the poor Dario breakup scene.
Yeah. We're going to miss Dario.
And it was great.
You are. Only Greta's going to miss Dario.
But it was also really interesting. I mean, it was all great. We know why we love the show. It was all great. It was also really interesting to go back and reread some of the second book and see some episodes in the first season. Two things. First of all, with the exception of Harry Potter, I cannot think of another popular entertainment in which you actually get to see real people grow up.
Hmm.
That's true.
Right? Yeah. Harry Potter, the first movie, Daniel Radcliffe was, what, 11 or 12? By the end of the last, he was probably 19 or 21 because, of course.
Boyhood with magic.
Yeah. I mean, it was really – and it was fascinating to see all those characters.
Yeah, boyhood.
All those actors, not just characters, grow up. And it was really interesting. This is the same thing. You go back and there's Arya. I can't think of their actress.
Maisie Williams.
She's
a baby.
Yeah. The actress who plays Sansa. What is her
name? Sophie Turner.
Sophie Turner, who said in an interview we shared today that she found out about oral sex.
From reading a Game of Thrones script.
Oh,
right.
My.
She had no idea.
Wow.
That's how young she was when this all began.
That's such
I love
a weird
the way she said
age.
It in the interview, too, because she went, oh, that's a thing people do? Fascinating.
Like, yes. Wasn't her reaction like, eh?
Yep. Oh, but, that's a thing?
And
that's
so she
adorable.
Was really that young as a human being, as an actress. But the difference between Harry Potter and this, in this regard...
In addition to oral sex being in one series and not the other.
Definitely not the other.
Yeah.
Two differences.
Unless you go into some really dark areas of the internet, but don't do that.
Uh-huh. Speaking of shipping.
Is that the characters in Harry Potter really don't change very much at all. Harry is the same guy at the age of 12 as he is at the age of whatever he is in the last 17 in the last story. He's the same stalwart guy with the same doubts, same with Hermione, same with Draco, same with Ron. These characters really, really change.
That's true.
While not losing their essential nature. For example, Sansa, who when we meet her is this sort of frivolous young woman who despises everything, who's in love with Joffrey and thrilled with pageantry and romance.
A moody teenage girl.
A moody, preteen even.
Yeah.
That person still exists by the end of season six. Radically changed, but it's the same person.
Huh.
And that's amazing. I cannot think of anything else like that ever, other than, as I said, Harry Potter, which comes close. But I've never seen anything like that. I've said this before, but if this whole thing is about one thing, it's about parents and children and the effect of parents on children. In fact, there is a speech in the last episode where Daenerys is talking to Arya. Not Arya. She's Arya in the book. She's Asha. In the book, Yara is her name in the TV show. Yara and Theon, and she says to him, "says we are the children of terrible fathers, and they made the world worse, and we're going to make the world better," which is a nice thing to think. But speaking as someone who went from being a son to a father myself, it's harder than you imagine to be the better person than your own parent than you think it might be, and that I think is if there's one central theme to this show, it is that written by a guy who has no children.
And I think it's one of those things that people assume is going to be easier, like you said, and then there's often overcorrecting. So whatever Daenerys thought was wrong with her father and that she would do differently, she's maybe going too far in the opposite direction.
Right.
And also it's all still wrapped up in the hubris of thinking that anyone ought to rule. That's the thing that sometimes I forget about this show, And then I remember, which is, I actually don't want any of them to be on the Iron Throne because probably nobody should be on the Iron Throne.
There shouldn't be an Iron Throne.
Yeah, yeah. Which is a thought. And that's also an interesting thought. When Peter Baelish says, I want to be in the Iron Throne, why? Why would anybody want that job? Yeah. It hasn't really worked out for anybody who's had it for an awfully long time.
This is why I think maybe Varys is my favorite character now.
One.
Because I feel like he has been
in
working behind the scenes. Because he's a merman,
yeah.
Number one, most important.
Yeah.
Number two, it's because whereas Baelish seems to be self-interested in his behind-the-scenes power play, Varys, I get the sense, is actually trying to protect the realm. Whether he's successful or not is a different question. But since the early days with his little birds and with Daenerys and with everything he's done, it seems like he's trying to play the powerful, egotistical people who have access to power
right.
in ways that will result in peace and calmness,
yes.
potentially,
yes.
in the realm.
And
yes.
it's not his own self-interest.
And it's not his own self-interest.
Yeah. yeah. In a weird,
and it's
you're
because
right.
he doesn't have a penis, so he doesn't
Ayo.
Ayo.
Patriarchy jingle.
Same way. I'm just saying, he is not driven by his own desire to procreate or to have power or to have a dynasty that is of his own biology,
or even
and
to like have wealth
is.
That can be inherited.
Else
yeah.
Is.
Yeah, and remember from the very beginning of both the books and the TV show, he was agitating, he was conspiring, if you will, to restore the Targaryens to the throne.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. So that clearly
for peace.
Yes, for peace for the realm.
Yes.
As he likes to say.
The only one who seems to be Leo Magarying this. Maybe him and Dobby.
We always come back to that.
We always do.
We always come
Man,
back
so
to that.
So many good references.
I know.
This week.
I know.
You've done very good work.
We were talking about like the fact that your nerds. Friends corrected us on, like, it wasn't a morning
flail.
Star, it was a flail. And that made me think, because I was like this. I was obsessed with not only, you know, I was obsessed with fantasy. I was a huge Tolkien nerd that takes place in a world which is essentially simple. And part of the simplicity is the way that they fight. We'll put aside the whole Freudian issues of nerds, particularly male nerds, getting really obsessed with long-edged weapons,
mm-hmm.
and we'll just
yes,
say,
let's.
But everything seems so much clearer when it's just guys with swords, good guys and bad guys about to have a sword fight. And that, I think, for nerds, I think one of the, what shall we say, distinguishing characteristics of we nerds, us nerds, is that we find the real world a little overwhelming in its complexities, and we don't know how to manage it. And so, therefore, we look at a world where everything is simpler. And we imagine that we would do better in that world because
think,
it makes sense to us.
I think, and we should go to voicemails in just a minute
yeah,
because some people have sent us their predictions and they're very good. But I would say to that point, nerds do that often with fantasy. But the culture around professional sports or college sports in particular,
oh, sure.
I
yes.
think
sure,
is serving
right.
the exact same role.
Oh, there is
a huge swath of the population.
Overlap between sports nerds and
I think
our nerds.
People are just finding their way. To watch people do battle,
declare
yes.
allegiance.
A winner and a loser at the
exactly.
end.
Exactly.
Because that sense of completion is not in the real world.
I am also a baseball fan, and I have often thought about that very
yeah.
thing, that the great thing about baseball is you have winners and you have losers. It's very simple. There's this guy versus that guy. Who's going to win? There are numbers. Like,
yep.
that guy won
there
because
are
he has a
numbers.
Higher number than that guy. You're absolutely right.
Should we be giving scores to people in Game of
Thrones? In a weird way.
We
should talk about stats. We could have like a Game of Thrones fantasy league where everybody
White
gets to draft.
In.
Exactly. Everybody gets to draft their
oh
favorite
my God,
characters.
Yeah, that would be pretty mm-hmm. great. All right. In just a minute, we will listen to some voicemails and talk about what we have learned on the interwebs about what might happen in season 7. Okay, so let's take a listen to some of your dear listener predictions.
Hi, I saw your tweet asking for suggestions and hopes and dreams for the upcoming season of your recap show, and I want to throw out the suggestion for this. Are there going to be any more books? I wonder about this because Germ being famously slow writing, or is it just that the passion is gone because the story is being told on a TV show. Anyway, I look forward to your season coming up and everything else. Bye.
Germ.
Well, Germ or Grimm. Trisha probably knows more than I do, but I'll go first. My understanding is that he's
reverse patriarchy jingle. Reverse patriarchy.
He still
jingle.
Is going first. I don't know.
Well, what
man.
I'm
going
to do is I'm going to say
you know
that
more, but he's going first.
Work. I'm going to say this, and then I'm going to give Trisha the chance to correct me.
Okay, that's so better. That's a better way of putting
it. It's a gift
that.
In a weird way.
The wisdom of the ages wrapped up in the body of a short, bald game show host.
You're welcome.
My understanding is that George R. R. Martin has been working on book 1, 4, 5, 6. Which is called The Winds of Winter, for an awfully long time.
Yes.
And there was a thought that it would come out before last season. That obviously hasn't happened. To my knowledge, there is no publication date of this book.
I don't know that he has any incentive to do it.
Yeah, I don't know that he does really either. I mean, he does. I will give him credit that he wrote a bunch of long books already, and he did it at a time when
he is capable
people
of
weren't
writing
all
books.
Clamoring for them. Mm-hmm. So he has an interest in this story that is separate from our interest in this story. I
right.
will give him that.
That's true.
But I do think that his role in the TV show and how well-received and how beloved the TV show is probably taking the impulse away from doing it quickly, if at all.
Yeah.
I have a theory.
What, Greta?
He is going to see what happens in season 7 on the HBO show. And if we all hate it, then he's going to write a different version
no.
and say that's what was supposed to happen.
It's possible.
Right?
I think Trisha is right that it must be impossible to sit down and do what he did for the first, I guess, technically five books and just let his imagination go where he wanted it to go without in conversation and probably not to a good sense with the world, you know, because
yeah.
let's say, for example, that he did not like some aspect of the TV show. Well, does he say, well, I didn't like that, so I'm not going to do that. Or maybe he's just like, well, they did that, so I'm not going to.
Yeah.
Like, that's how the Battle of the Bastards worked out, but I'm going to do something totally different. How can he write clearly without being in reaction to? I must have mentioned this before. I'm a huge fan of the book The Silence of the Lambs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I absolutely—
You assigned that as homework.
I did. And I absolutely loathe the sequel to it, which is called Hannibal.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the problems, I mean, it's just awful in all the ways that Silence of the Lambs is great. And one of the reasons, I think, is that Thomas Harris, the author, was reacting to the world which had seen the movie and embraced this character and loved it so much. And he was like, well, you loved it so much, I'm going to screw with you. So, for example, most egregiously, he has Clarice and Hannibal Lecter get together romantically in the book, which thank God they didn't do in the movie, which I've never seen. And that is such a screw you to his own fandom and to the world as a way of like saying, no, this is mine.
Yeah.
And I can make them do whatever I want, no matter what you people want or think is right, because they're mine, even to the point of, I won't say self-harm, but I'll say counterproductivity.
Yeah, I mean, that's cutting off your nose to spite
yeah,
your face.
Yeah, it's almost like, I mean, I often thought of it in the same way as like the ending of The Sopranos.
Mm.
Where it's like everybody's like, you all know what's going to happen. You think you know, says David Chase, who created that show.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, I'm going to not do anything. I'm going to end it the way I want to end it, and I'm not going to give in to any of your theories, desires, or plans. And I think that must be overwhelming. How do you sit and write clearly and create clearly with all these expectations?
Yeah, I can't imagine.
I think also I have a theory that the more successful authors become, sometimes, not always, the more freedom they're given, and that freedom actually doesn't always make writing better. Good editing makes writing better.
Talk to Greta, who just read book 5.
Just talking about that in the context of The Order of the Phoenix.
Yeah.
And I think that's really true, especially with these long series, but even with people who are just doing successive works that are separate from each other. The thing that made them brilliant was, in part, speaking as an editor, their editors.
Oh, no question.
Always.
And
yeah.
So having a whole book where favorite characters don't appear at all because you're meandering, having a whole book where, you know, I mean, it's just no one can tell him no now.
Yeah, well, that is
And they really ought to, because good writers need great editors.
I stopped reading Stephen King around the time where it became clear no one was telling him no. And you started getting these incredibly bloated books that had like a great book buried inside there.
Yeah.
But no one tells Stephen King, maybe you want to cut that chapter?
Mm.
And that happened a little bit to J.K. Rowling. But let's give her credit in that she was dealing with the same thing. If I'm not mistaken, I don't remember the timing, but certainly the 6th and 7th books came out after the first movie.
Right, yeah. They must have.
So she clearly was able to keep to her vision and bring it to a tremendously satisfying conclusion, despite it becoming, you know. What is that? There's a famous saying, like, now it belongs to the world. That must be something that drives writers crazy to hear that about their work.
Okay,
let's do just
voicemail.
One more voicemail.
Hi, this is Lydia in Los Angeles. I called like 2 days ago because I've been re-listening to the whole season 6 recap. I'm also calling from the car, which makes for excellent radio.
Thanks, Amy.
I'm listening to 610 and thinking about Jamie and Cersei, but I guess book readers, well, some book readers I know think that they sort of botched Jamie's character when he returned the first time and sort of raped Cersei near Joffrey's dead body.
For sure did.
Be that as it may, he's really still on a road to redemption as much as he loves his family, and she's gone batshit crazy. And I think this echoes back to theories that the little brother that's going to kill her was never Tyrion, but it was Jaime. So I fully expect him to come back to King's Landing, rip her a new one, and then maybe stab her in the back if she starts going crazy. Anyway, love you guys. Love
anyway.
Anyway, love you guys.
Okay.
Love you too.
Keep it up. Bye.
Yeah, this is something we actually talked about a little bit last season as well, as the prediction.
We remember that Jaime has stabbed a crazy ruler in the back before.
The Kingslayer will become the Queenslayer.
Yeah.
I believe that this season.
Absolutely.
I also think it's worth clarifying that there's no sort of rape. There's rape and not rape. There's consent or no consent. And Jaime raped Cersei.
Right. Do you think that his character has been botched?
Having not read the books, but only the internet extensively.
Yes.
I think that there's still actually some interesting character growth to happen for Jaime. I feel like a lot of other folks are solidifying into who they are, have seen a lot of growth in them. But the fact that he lets Pod and Brienne go, the fact that he takes River Run without murdering everyone, he's not being very Lannister about it all. He's becoming his own man and making his own decisions now that his father is gone and now that his sister has gone round the bend to Crazy Town. I think he's got a killer.
He's got potential to be a very interesting character this time around, I think.
The Jamie's, I hate to use this phrase, character arc was from somebody who, when we met him, was entirely conscienceless, amoral, and utterly self-centered is not the right word. He was sufficient to himself. He didn't need anybody else. He had his sister, and nobody else mattered. You know, remember that early scene of the first season?
Oh, he was brutal.
Yeah, where he killed his own relative just as a plot to get out of the cage. He thought if he killed him, he'd get out, so he's dead, you know. Totally brutal. And remember, the first thing we see him do is throw Bran out the window. And his journey has been about, I hate to use that word, but his development has been about learning that other people matter and developing kind of feelings about other people, most especially and importantly, Brienne.
Yeah,
and the last thing we see of Jaime in the books is that he's doing stuff very similar to what he's been doing in the TV show in terms of dealing with River Run and the Blackfish and all that. And then Brienne shows up and says, come with me. And he's like, yes. And he runs off with her. So the idea being that that is someone to whom he has loyalty, which is something he has never felt toward anyone but his sister in his whole life. And so we'll see, I guess, if that part of him continues to develop or if he just goes back, which seems unlikely given the way he looked at Cersei in that last shot, to just like, you and me, Cersei, we shall rule the world together as Targaryen-like sister-brother kings.
Ugh.
Ugh.
And it does seem to me that we'll see, I guess, is really the adequate conclusion.
Adequate conclusion. I'm going to ask one last question.
Too. Sure.
Greta, are you excited about this?
I am excited.
Really?
You know, actually, I watched the trailer recently and was like, oh, shit, this is going to be fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, this is really a good TV series.
It was pretty good. Do you want to talk about the trailer for just a minute? Because I know a lot of
stuff. Yeah, you've got some notes that
really,
we haven't gotten.
I'm an old man, and I know what my pleasures are, and one of them are listening to Trisha dissect trailers. So please, Trisha,
what do you got?
Lay it
TV?
On us.
All right, so good people of the internet have screen capped and zoomed in and CSI'd
good people
this
of the
trailer.
Internet.
CSI'd.
Yes, the verbs to CSI. So we know that Dany is heading to Dragonstone because Stannis is not there anymore.
Yeah, there's a shot of her in front of the table.
Indeed, the table, and we see it in the distance in one of the shots, which someone pointed out that Dragonstone is built on a deposit of obsidian, which is dragonglass, which is going to come in handy because we must fight the White Walkers.
Okay.
Yes, Dragonstone is a volcano. And it is defined that in book two, because I just read that little bit.
So it can be a forge? Are we going towards sort of dragon glass forge?
Hadn't thought of that.
Because, we were worried the dragons might have to be working in the forge.
Now also, I'm just picturing them singing like a
I think that was something
song.
You mentioned in the last episode, actually. Because, if they have to work in the forge, then they're not helpful fighting. Okay, sorry. Go on, Trisha.
Entertainment Weekly says that Game of Thrones now holds a record because in one scene in this coming season, They set more stuntmen on fire for a single scene than anyone ever has in all of screen things.
You mean that's something that's like gossip from the set?
Yeah.
Like, we had a shot where we set more stuntmen on fire than anybody else has ever had.
That's amazing.
Yeah, put it in the books.
Put it in the
books. I am excited.
The person from the Guinness Book of World Records was there and was like, 1, 2, 3, 4, 17 people on fire, you win. Yeah, I guess that's how it happened. I don't know.
I read a story in Time of a guy who visited the set, and he said that when this big fight happens, the internet will melt. That was the language he used.
You're on Greyjoy.
That would not be a bad thing, by the way, if the internet were actually melt.
Well, all those dudes on fire.
I might read more books if that happens.
Yeah, that's fair.
You're on Greyjoy.
Yes.
Is the new baddie for
this
season.
Yes, he has to be. Yeah. We talked about it. Yeah. I think one of you predicted that.
I did.
And I remember thinking then, and as I think now, you're right, because they need a new baddie for the season in the manner of the Sopranos.
Thank you.
And the actor who is playing Euron has said that he this season will make Ramsay look, quote, like a little kid.
Ooh. He's throwing it down.
But kind of exciting.
This is very exciting. Jim Broadbent, a.k.a. Horace Slugworth from the Harry Potter films.
Yes. Slughorn.
Is playing the Archmaester.
I'm just going to say so many more things.
Oh, the
that.
Archmaester.
He is truly one of the great actors in, I think, in the world. He's in so many great things. Like, he's in Moulin Rouge. He's fantastic.
So
I'm glad to hear it. He'll be fabulous.
Do we have any word on Benedict Cumberbatch, though?
No sightings thus far. Ed Sheeran is doing a cameo this season. Fun fact.
Yeah. Ed Sheeran, the musician.
Indeed, because Maisie Williams likes him and he likes Game of Thrones.
Uh-huh.
In the trailer, we see a kiss between Yara Greyjoy and Ilaria Sand, which could be for love, could be for murder, could be for both.
Yes. We remember how Ilaria Sand likes to kill people.
With her lips.
Yes.
But also, maybe they're just like into it.
Yeah, you never know.
And maybe it's just awesome.
But they're into it.
Sometimes.
Have we talked about Yara and Danny hooking up?
You did.
Yara tried. Oh, okay. And Danny was like,
I'm glad I did.
Yara, when did Yara try?
Yara.
Because I watched the courtroom, the throne room scene, which I mentioned earlier, like we are both children of terrible fathers. I did not notice any sexual tension, but I am famously oblivious to that.
Okay, we'll see.
Other things we should know, I think, are that, hang on, let me find the one more.
I just want to say that Trisha right now is reading from a little notebook in exactly the manner of Indiana Jones figuring out where to put the Staff of Ra in the map room in Raiders, and I love it.
Oh, Peter, I wanted to ask you about this one, which is that we have a new character coming who is a Karstark, a woman who is Alice Karstark.
Well, I know who the Karstarks are. The Karstarks were the family that was led by this guy who Rob executed shortly before the Red Wedding.
Oh, right.
You may remember that this lord had against Rob's orders, executed some Lannister captives. Because he went against his orders, Rob cut off his head in the manner of his father doing it himself. And because of that, the Karstarks left Rob's army, leading him eventually on to defeat. And that was echoed when one of the lords who John was going around trying to get him to help, said, I'm not going to go with you. Rob killed my father. So that's all I know about Karstarks.
All right, we have a new female character in the North. Megan Parkinson is playing this role, a new Karstark, who hopefully will be somebody to be a badass White Walker fighting awesome person. And one of the creators of the show gave a little hint about how soon we might see Dany in snow. By saying that she rides this mechanical bull-like thing whenever she's supposed to be riding a dragon.
Yes.
And he's like, she does this for hours and hours every day, and we throw fake snow at her face the whole day. And everybody was like, aha.
Aha.
She's
it was
in the
first time she had snow thrown at her.
I actually try to avoid this stuff because I'm like, I'm going to watch the TV show anyway. Why not be surprised? But I did happen to see a shot taken from a drone, like somebody spying on the set. Of Daenerys walking, walking next to Jon Snow as if in consultation. So clearly they're going to meet.
Okay. What else you got, Trisha? Are those the main points?
And just my one thing is that I think my shipping of Tormund Giantsbane and Brienne.
Oh, good. I'm glad you're bringing that up.
Come to fruition.
Okay, good. That's important.
Something has to happen. That is so awesome.
Okay, so we want you also to join the conversation. Don't forget we have this fancy new hashtag that is GOT NerdCaps. And Peter is at Peter Seigel on Twitter. We are at NerdAtPodcast. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail. That number is 312-948-4687.
I also want to encourage folks on Sunday night after you've watched the show, if you have burning questions or reactions, call us then, mm-hmm. and we will try to get some of those into the Monday morning show.
Yeah, we're going to start taping these the Monday morning after the Sunday broadcast. So if you can get those questions in, we will try to address them on Monday.
Exactly.
You can find us online at wbez.org/nerdatrecaps. Thanks to Spork for Beans.
Good
left
one.
Us a lovely review on Apple Podcasts that helps spread the good word about
Spork
this show.
Spork for Beans.
Spork for Beans.
Spork for number four
number
beans.
Number four beans, yeah.
Okay.
The show is produced by us with help from Justin Bull. Justin, do you have anything you want to add at this moment? You don't have a mic. You want my mic?
The show sounds very grandiose.
Justin has not seen Game of Thrones.
You know what I think? I'm gonna pitch this to Justin right now. So we're gonna tell you what, we'll put it out to listeners. You think Justin should watch the episodes of season 7 with us, or just start from the beginning and check in?
I think what we should do is he should start with season 7 and he should do like a 60-second recap at the top of the show that's just like, this guy did this thing with this person and I'm not sure who this person
that would
is,
be
but
very
they did this
funny.
Thing too, and there's some dragons.
And who the hell is that?
Yeah, I think
why
that
are there
could
so
be
many naked
fun,
people?
You know? Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. I think
I'll
that's...
That. I'll write 60 seconds. Someday.
Oh, good. Justin says he's going to do that. That should be very fun. Our executive producer is Joel Meyer. And
who has not approved any of this.
And our theme music was composed by Andrew Edwards of Blue Police Box Music. Do
We're back,
homework.
Nerds.
Winter is here.
Yes. I'm glad to be facing it with you.
Yes. Oh, we should say real quick, thank you to the Lyric Opera.
Oh, yes.
Yes, Lyric Opera.
So hopefully this will go up on iTunes by the time you're listening to this. Is that what we hope?
Yeah, if they're listening, it's an iTunes.
Yeah,
for sure.
The image.
Apple Podcasts. Oh, yes.
And they will. You will see why we are so grateful to the Lyric Opera.
Yes.
Have you ever wondered why anyone drinks Malort? Or if there are actually lobsters in the Chicago River? Then listen to the Curious City podcast, where we answer all your questions about Chicago and the region. WBEZ's Curious City is part of the NPR network and available wherever you find your podcasts.